Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives to close out the week. And Jim, it's been a very odd week here on the Three Martini Lunch, but today we actually start with some very good news, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday with the mainstream media basically out of ways to defend Hillary Clinton over this email scandal, and now we're getting stories from the mainstream and other press showing that the Democrats are basically in panic mode at this point. They don't see Hillary Clinton as the inevitable next president. They're not even sure that she should be the nominee at this point. There were rumblings for a number of hours last night and into this morning that former Vice President Al Gore should make another run at this thing. There's been reports day after day about Joe Biden hunkering down at the beach in South Carolina trying to figure out if he should run for president. So what once was a coronation has turned into something far different. The names being thrown out there show that the Democrats don't have a lot of good options right now.
No, it was kind of fascinating. By the late afternoon, BuzzFeed and other outlets were talking about that Gore advisors were pouring lukewarm water on the idea, that they'd been exploring it and it was not out of the realm of possibility. They wanted to see financially whether this would work out logistically if you could suddenly jump in this late. On the one hand, we're kind of scoffing. On the other hand, Al Gore's been through this before. He's run for president twice. Since then, he's become this, to the environmental or green movement, I'm trying to think of an appropriately quasi-divine figure. maybe Morgan Freeman, you know? this wise man who speaks from on high, gives terrible warnings about doom befalling us unless we repent. You figure there'd be some money there. You figure that, I mean, they'll also keep in mind, you know, Al Gore did make like $1 billion by selling Current TV to the Qatari Al Jazeera group. All that oil money, of course, to the fossil fuel demonizing environmentalist. If Gore wanted to jump in, it would be something that Democrats would have to take seriously. And you also have to figure, in addition to being rabidly anti-Bush, the good chunk of the Democratic base sees Al Gore as what should have been, right? That he's been unjustly wronged by the Supreme Court. He should have been president, yada, yada, yada. So if he had jumped in, I think this might have shaken things up. By this morning, his advisor, no, it's not going to happen, all that stuff. But apparently the Biden talk is much more serious. Now, the reason I say this is the good martini is that, look, clearly in the past week or so, combination of factors, including Bernie Sanders jumping ahead in New Hampshire, and even if you don't like that poll, the trend is that he's going to be very serious there. The trend is he's going to be a very serious player in Iowa. The suggestion that Biden might come in, the bad news about the servers and the fact that the FBI is seriously investigating, it's a different primary now. She is not inevitable. This is not a coronation anymore. And if you're any Democrat who has ever thought about wanting to run for president, you might have a really good shot in this environment. Now, whether, you know, Gore probably will pass on it, Biden is looking a little more serious with each passing day. One, it's good for democracy for this to have choice, for people to have choices, even Democrats. Two, it's entirely possible you end up having a tougher primary, a negative primary. Now, Democrats can unite after primaries, as we saw in 2008. That's obviously going to drain resources and the potential of bad blood and cause complications. Democrats would much rather have a smooth, happy, cheery primary. I think it's better for us that they really get to let their liberal freak flag fly, Greg.
And I think it also goes back to something that's kind of often a hidden benefit from big wave elections that the Republicans enjoyed, particularly in 2010, but also in 2014, either by defeating Democrats or by making sure new Democrats never got elected to higher office. The bench just isn't there. They basically have to rebuild a new generation. And I think in addition to gaining back the House and Senate, that's another added benefit that you really don't even think about a lot of the time.
As I said, the Democrats' idea of an inspiring, effective governor, it was young and bright, the future of the party, is Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley will do for America what he did for Baltimore.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And bad and crazy both deal with ISIS, so buckle up, everyone. Jim, I believe it was almost 2 years ago, it was even earlier than that, the president set the red line about if the Syrians use the chemical weapons, that's when we're going to have to use military action. About 2 years ago, we found out that they had used chemical weapons, and so the president briefly tried to rally support for military action. It wasn't going to happen. So then thanks to Vladimir Putin throwing out a lifeline that if we can just get the Syrians to give up their chemical weapons, then, you know, everything should be fine. So Obama and Kerry took him up on that, and they said that the Syrians had given up all their chemical weapons. Well, not only are there reports that the Syrians are once again gassing their political and military opponents, but it would appear that ISIS somehow is in possession of these as well. Here's Barbara Starr reporting from the Pentagon for CNN.
Multiple U.S. officials are telling CNN the Obama administration is investigating credible reports that ISIS in Syria and Iraq is in possession of mustard gas, a chemical weapon. What they are investigating is that the latest use of this may have been earlier this week in a town, a Kurdish town in northern Iraq. There are reports, credible reports, people there fell ill with symptoms that are very much identified with mustard gas. The belief broader than this one attack in this town in northern Iraq is that ISIS may have come into possession of mustard gas at some time before the attack earlier this week.
Jim, it's a fairly good bet they came into possession of the gas before they used it, you know. Seems normal, but
it's a lot harder to come into possession of chemical weapons after you use them.
I would think so. But Jim, Saddam never had them, and Syria gave them all up. What's going on?
Yeah, this is discussed over in the corner earlier today. This is bad on several levels. I mean, one is obviously, you know, whenever somebody uses chemical weapons, that's very bad. The idea of ISIS having them is particularly unnerving, because what if at some point, instead of trying to use them on the battlefield, they use them in some sort of terror attack? Even if mustard gas is not necessarily the single most effective or devastating chemical weapon, there's two combinations, one being the immediate effect of it and, of course, the fear factor of using chemical weapons. The other thing, which is kind of sitting here, obviously Obama said, oh, you know, Assad gave up his chemical weapons. Well, if he gave them up to ISIS, then things are not better. There was some speculation that they've obtained them from Syria because they had a whole bunch of them. And, oh, by the way, maybe they didn't turn over everything. And nobody really can account for every chemical weapon that's been floating around in Syria for years. Oh, by the way, over in Syria, Bashar Assad is using napalm against towns outside Damascus. That is a violation of the Chemical Weapons Convention. And I kind of tried to summarize this as, look, from about the gassing of the Kurds to really Damascus 2 years ago, I'm speaking off the top of my head, maybe you can find some use of chemical weapons or something like that. But generally, there was this, no, we can't let this happen. If somebody uses chemical weapons, that's letting the genie out of the bottle. Anytime somebody uses it, there's got to be a serious consequence. That's what the whole red line rhetoric was about, that war is war. But once you start using chemical weapons, biological weapons, and nuclear weapons, it's non-conventional warfare. And we got to do everything we can to prevent people from using that, because the consequences that flow forth from that are so horrible. We haven't done that, and this is what the red line was about. Where now Assad has used it. There's a couple of rumors that he's used it a couple times since this agreement with the U.S. Now ISIS has it. I think it's entirely possible we're heading towards a near future of increasingly, I don't know how to say common, but less and less rare use of chemical weapons in warfare. And that's a really kind of nightmarish thought to think about.
And it's a double whammy in terms of ISIS this week. I don't think we're really surprised by either story. Perhaps a little bit surprised that they were actually able to get their hands on chemical weapons, but I don't even think a lot of people who have followed this closely are too shocked by that happening. The New York Times actually wrote a very powerful piece on this new rape culture that ISIS has instituted. They've brought back sexual slavery. Here's just a little bit of the beginning of that story. In the moments before he raped the 12-year-old girl, the Islamic State fighter took the time to explain what he was about to do was not a sin. Because the preteen girl practiced a religion other than Islam, the Quran not only gave him the right to rape her, it condoned and encouraged it, he insisted. He bound her hands and gagged her. Then he knelt beside the bed and prostrated himself in prayer before getting on top of her. When it was over, he knelt to pray again, bookending the rape with acts of religious devotion. And so CNN then did a story on this. I don't know if it's the same girl, but clearly featuring a very young girl who had been through this as well. And the reports are up to 60% of Yazidi women and girls are now in sexual slavery connected with ISIS. And here's how Chris Cuomo of CNN comes out of that story.
Let's finish this part of the discussion on a point that you feel often needs to be made. This feeds the impression that these Muslims are animals, savages, and their faith makes them that way. And it feeds an impression of what Islam is.
It's not an impression, Jim. It's a fact.
The way he's sounding is like, guest, I'm really concerned that ISIS, people could judge all of ISIS by the actions of a few. We got to remember the moderate ISIS members out there. Chris Cuomo is a guy who, looking at his brother, maybe this is the shallow end of the Cuomo gene pool, in that he, you know, recently made some sort of argument where he was basically arguing, no, fire in a crowded theater, you know, hate speech is banned, and an interpretation of the Constitution and First Amendment that most people thought was spectacularly wrongheaded and just not the sort of interpretation anybody who went to law school would come around espousing. He just didn't seem to know what he was talking about. Then on this one, so let's not talk about what rapes ISIS is committing. I mean, it's almost like this axiomatic knee-jerk Pavlovian response of these guys that whenever something comes out, there's this, don't go judging Muslims, as if we're all this like frothing at the mouth mass that's going to take a swing at the local imam or the Muslim family down the street over something that ISIS does. And I just don't – I think that's unbelievable insulting to the audience. I think it's insulting to American culture. And it's just baffling that he felt this need. And the really interesting thing is that the guest, Muslim women's rights activist Quanta Ahmed, didn't really agree.
Right.
It said, this is Islamism at work. We've talked a lot about this on this show. Islamism is totalitarianism. This means absolute dominance. Like, even the Muslim on set, like, no, we can talk about this. This is fine. This is not, going to lead to stereotyping. So just a baffling non sequitur almost from Chris Cuomo, and just a disappointing that, political correctness or this idea of, don't judge Muslims, would come up in the middle of a discussion of a, really horrifying and important story.
Wow. All right. A very depressing
way to end the week, right?
A depressing way to end the week, but it's also, I'm pretty sure, about as depressing as the week started. So it's a decent bookend in that regard. Jim, hopefully better news awaits on Monday. Talk to you then. Have a good weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. Please tune in Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.